It's 2:06 here at Kate Radio, AM 1450. Afternoons with Aaron. And we talked to this guy, I think about 3 weeks ago, and then with the fair, and I know John was busy 1 week, that we haven't got a chance to continue our conversation. John Millay, media specialist at the Minnesota State High School League, has John's Journal. In our last conversation, we talked about John's top 10 stories from the 2021-2022 school year. We went through 6 through 10, but we got to get you 1 through 5. So John Millay joins us this afternoon. And John, hey, good afternoon. How you been?
Aaron, great. I'm just off some vacation. I'm in the midst of gearing up for fall practices, and away we go. It's a great time of year.
So where'd you go on vacation?
Well, I have a son and a daughter-in-law who live outside of San Francisco.
Oh,
they
cool.
have two little kids. I've got two grandkids. So my wife and I and our daughter who lives here, we flew to San Francisco, spent a week out there, got home Tuesday, you know, and boy, if you want to feel like a grandpa, plan your day around the schedule of a 3-year-old and a 9-month-old. Holy mackerel. When you hear that first hollering child of the day at 6:10 in the morning or 5:45, whenever they decide it's time to go, yeah, you better take a nap when the kids are taking a nap. That's what grandpa learned.
So you must need a vacation from your vacation.
Well, I've slept very well since we got home. Let's put it that way. Grandpa is catching up.
Now, John, before we get to your top five of John's Journal from last school year, I do have to mention this because I thought it was cool that you posted this. Now, John, I'm going to age you. You're 61. Is that correct?
I am 63.
And John did something for the first time. I saw you got a tattoo.
I have a tattoo. And again, this ties in with my grandkids. My daughter, who lives here in Minneapolis, she got her first tattoo in college, you know, 12 years ago or so. She got a little tiny Harry Potter lightning bolt on one wrist. It was really cute. And now I think she's got 12 tattoos now. All of them bigger than the little tiny cute Harry Potter lightning bolt. But she convinced me, you know, she's been working on me for a long time. And, you know, I thought, do I get my grandkids' names tattooed? What do I get? And I ended up, my family were Irish, super Irish. You know, one of my aunts years ago did the genealogy before Ancestry.com and all that. He traced it back to a guy named John Millay getting on a boat in Ireland and coming to America basically around the time of the Civil War. That's the most long ago ancestor we know of.
Oh, wow.
1850s or 60s.
So he had the same name as you. Same name as you.
Same name as me. I'm sure he had a much better Irish accent and was probably smarter than me. But anyway, that's how we started here, at least this branch of the Millays. So I wanted to kind of tie that family heritage into my grandkids. So I have on the inside of my left forearm, covering about half of that, I have the Gaelic, the old Irish word for grandfather,
which is,
and it's in a Gaelic script. It's Seanahair is how you pronounce it. I posted a couple of photos of it a week or so ago, Seanahair. So I'm a Seanahair, which is Gaelic for grandpa. So that's what I did. And of course, my 3-year-old grandson finds out grandpa has a tattoo. I'm sure he'd never heard of a tattoo, never heard the word, didn't know this was a thing. He's three. He's a 3-year-old boy. He announced he's going to get a tattoo and his tattoo is going to say poo poo. So that's my kind of humor.
Oh, that is awesome. I just have one, but I want to welcome you to the tattoo club. And that's cool. I love the meaning behind it.
Go. Yeah, I gave it a ton of thought, I'm glad I did it. It was an interesting experience. A lot of people have asked me, did it hurt? And, you know, it really didn't. It took about 20 minutes. They make sure this is what you want. This is where you want it. They go to work. You walk out of there with a little bit of a, I wouldn't say soreness, but, you know, you've got to watch it for a few days. You don't want to fight off infections. They give you a little ointment to rub on it. It kind of has to heal a little bit, but it's on there. It's not coming off, so I hope I did a good thing here.
John Millay with the Minnesota State High School League, a media specialist joining us. And I know John's going to be in his vehicle searching for stories for the upcoming school year with practice starting on Monday, but we got to recap with John the top five of John's journal from last year, from the 2021 to 2022 school year. So many great stories that John finds each year. So, John, let's complete the countdown and start with number five.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Yeah, as I do every summer, I go through all the stories from the previous school year and rank my own personal top 10 and some years, five honorable mentions, which I did this year. They're all on the High School League website, mshsl.org. Find John's journal and start clicking. You'll find them. The number five story was basically kind of a wrap-up of the first season of girls high school wrestling with state tournaments and state champions and all that. Kind of focused on one family from Wadena Deer Creek, where the dad is the athletic director up there, a former wrestling coach, and one of his two daughters, who had been basically a scorekeeper for the wrestling team. And now he's a wrestler, and kind of a fun story of that family's experience the first year of girls wrestling. Number four was really cool. I made my first trip way up north for a War Road Roseau boys hockey game. This was in Roseau in January. Just a cathedral of hockey, the arena in Roseau. Really a fun night, a night I'll never forget. I shot a lot of photos up there, so you can read about that game, kind of the history of the rivalry. History of the arena in Roseau, which goes back to the 40s. Really, a really neat place. I'm glad I had that opportunity. The number three story was about Brad Wendland, the Waukesha football coach,
who
collapsed on the sideline and died. I mean, his heart was not beating. He was not breathing. And thanks to the athletic trainers from Waukesha and St. Peter and a nurse who was there to watch their sons play football, came out of the stands. They brought him back to life, and it's an amazing, amazing thing. I'm hoping to get down there to watch. We get to do a follow-up with Brad this fall. Number two was on the heels of a terrible situation during the boys' state basketball tournament after Minneapolis North and Morris area played at the state tournament. A student from Morris sent a real vile, racist social media message to one of the North players. It was awful. But a young girl at Morris Area High School, who is African American, living in a largely white community, just wrote kind of an editorial for the local paper. Lakaya Manska is her name, and she just did such a great job. She wrote about her experiences growing up as a minority person in a white outstate rural Minnesota town, and the things she faced. Really. Really thoughtful. I got to know her a little bit writing this story. I saw her at the state speech tournament. Just a great young lady. And the number one story was, I think it might have been the very first story I wrote from the 21-22 school year, about the girls soccer coach at St. Michael Albertville, who discovered that the mother of three girls, all who either played for the coach or had played for the coach, needed a kidney. She needed a kidney donor.
Oh, wow.
The coach, who didn't really know this mom, they weren't like friends. I don't really even think they were acquaintances, saw a Facebook message that the mom was needing a kidney, and with a link to a Mayo Clinic form where you can fill out information to see if you're a match. Megan Johnson is the coach. He ended up being the match, and Cleofe Zerna is the mom. It was just a remarkable story. Kind of happenstance how this all came about. Both of these ladies are moms of three kids, and just the joy in everybody's voices as I talked to them. I talked to one of the daughters of Cleofe, and just a really great story that far and away was my favorite story from last school.
John Millay with the Minnesota State High School League, the writer of John's Journal. You can find more details on all those stories at the Minnesota State High School League website, mshsl.org. And I did not hear, and I must have missed that entry, but that is an amazing number one. That's a good pick for number one.
Yeah, it really is. And we have a couple of awards we do at the High School League. Spirit of Sport Award, that's one of them. And this was our nominee. This was named our Minnesota High School Spirit of Sport Award winner, and we run those up to the National Federation, which works with similar organizations in all 50 states. And I really thought this could be the national winner, but we had a national winner of this award 1 year previously. So
okay.
I think they were giving other states a chance to win these awards. But, you know, we're always trying to spotlight those great stories that go beyond the scoreboard and just all the great things that can happen with high school activities.
Now, John, and I don't know if you know the answer offhand, but going back to girls wrestling having their own state tournament this year for the first time, Minnesota's in a very small group that has girls wrestling as a sanctioned high school sport. Is that correct?
I don't have a number for you, Aaron. I know it's a relatively small group, but I also know it's growing.
Okay, and that's
several
good.
Several other states just in the last 2-3 years have added girls wrestling as a fully sanctioned sport. Yeah, it's definitely growing around the country. And we know wrestling has struggled, you know, in recent years with numbers and you know, co-op teams. It's been a problem. And I think this is a great move to kind of get more kids involved in the sport, whether it's boys or girls.
John Millay, media specialist, Minnesota State High School League. And John, I saw on Twitter, maybe it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago, you had to answer questions about the upcoming Prep Bowl. Prep Bowl is going to be held the first weekend in December for those that like to go down to watch the high school games the Friday after Thanksgiving, Saturday after Thanksgiving. They had to move it to the following weekend because those Vikings, I mean, they kind of get top priority of what's going on. And I'll let you explain. They're playing on Thanksgiving Day night, and because of that, that's why Prep Bowl had to be moved to the next weekend.
Yeah, the Vikings and the New England Patriots are going to play at U.S. Bank Stadium, like a 7:30 kickoff Thanksgiving night. It'll be an NBC game. And the information we got from U.S. Bank Stadium is, other than the Super Bowl, this Thanksgiving night game, this is about the biggest production of any NFL game all season.
Oh, wow.
You know, Thanksgiving night, you know the audience is going to be huge. And here's the issue, though, because of the production and all the trucks that come in, all the gear that's set up, you know, it goes way beyond announcers in the booth and you know, 20 cameras. There's so much that goes into it. NBC won't even be out of the stadium till middle of the afternoon on Friday. And, you know, we would like, under general normal circumstances, we'd have our first Prep Bowl game at 10 a.m. Friday. So they won't be out till Friday afternoon. Channel 45, which does such a great job broadcasting our state tournaments, including the Prep Bowl, they need about 10 hours to set up test equipment. Generally, they do that on Thanksgiving Day. They come in there. They give up their Thanksgiving Day and get set up. So there's no way to play any Prep Bowl games the Friday after Thanksgiving. You know, I think several ideas were tossed around. One was, well, let's play games Saturday and Monday. You know, there's a total ban on high school league events on Sunday. That's not going to happen. So what about Saturday, Monday? But that seemed problematic. Saturday, sure, but not Monday. So the decision was made. The stadium was available the following weekend, December 2nd and 3rd. We'll have the normal schedule, 4 games on Friday, 3 games on Saturday. It'll be great fun. Everybody gets to have Thanksgiving at home. You know, I just, all these teams from outstate that have to play on Friday, you know, I've written about many of them who the football team gets on their buses at some point Thanksgiving morning, get to town, check into a hotel. Moms and dads will cobble up a Thanksgiving dinner for everybody, get a good night's sleep, and go play football the next day. Now everybody can do that at home. The media, we can all be at home. In my house, anyway, we don't travel for Thanksgiving. We have lots of options, lots of relatives in Iowa. They come here for Thanksgiving. So when this news came out last week, the first thing I said to my wife was, hey, if you want to go see some family for Thanksgiving, we can do that this year. There's a little upside to this. So for the first time, I believe, we'll have high school football in December. And, you know, there's been some minor griping on Twitter about, well, if those football players are in a winter sport, that's going to set them back a week. Yeah, it is for kids from 14 schools. That's
correct. Yeah.
And if you ask any of those kids or coaches or fans, would you rather be practicing basketball or hockey or wrestling or whatever, or would you rather be playing the Prep Bowl? We all know what the answer is. So, you know, nothing's perfect, but I think this is a good way to make sure everybody has the best possible experience.
And, John, I think it's a win-win for everybody here in Minnesota because it's exciting. The Vikings, for the first time ever, are hosting a game on Thanksgiving. I mean, that's a big deal right there, that we get to you know, sit on the couch Thanksgiving night and watch our team host a game. And then, like you mentioned, you still get the full 2 days of prep bowl in December. And again, this might never happen ever again. So, I mean, if there's a little blip in the schedule for 1 year, a big deal.
Yeah, well, you know, there'll be 2 weeks between the semifinals and the prep bowl. The rest of the football season, unchanged. And one thing I didn't realize till I was doing some digging, that Saturday after Thanksgiving, the Gophers football team plays at Wisconsin. That's a big game. The following weekend, there isn't a lot of college football. The Gophers are done, you know, barring a bowl game.
Yep.
So I think football coaches, you know, we hear with the, especially the boys basketball tournament, basketball coaches often wonder if we couldn't flip the girls and boys state basketball tournament, because the boys state tournament always conflicts with the early rounds in the NCAA men's tournament. And that prep bowl Saturday on Thanksgiving weekend, there are always great big rivalry football games. I mean, even in the press box at U.S. Bank Stadium, if the Gophers are playing, some of the TVs, a lot of them have the Gophers game on. And so this way, there'll still be some scattered college football games December 3rd, but nothing like the week before. So I think there's going to be some big upsides. I think the TV numbers for these prep bowl games should be great. There won't be as much competition with college games. So, yeah, I think it'll be fun. You know, kids, football's a rough game, and these kids who advance to the prep bowl, they're going to have 2 weeks. Hopefully everybody can be as healthy as possible and be raring to go.
John Millay with the Minnesota State High School League joining us here on Kate Radio. And John, before I let you go, again, we mentioned a practice starts on Monday for fall sports. And we talked about this in a previous discussion about the name, image, and likeness that high school athletes can now make money off of that. Is there any other changes as we head into the 2022-23 season?
No, the High School League Board of Directors, as we talked about before, Aaron, you know, several months ago, approved a name, image, and likeness policy for Minnesota high school athletes. And the whole point of this, I've had a lot of questions. The point of this is to make sure kids don't become ineligible. You know, there's ways you can do this. You basically can't be wearing a school uniform. You're not supposed to be identified as a high school athlete. There's it's not a big document. It's one page, but I know our office has gotten tons of calls and emails from administrators from all over the state. You know, how do we handle this if we have a student or several students who can make a little bit of money? None of these kids are going to make millions of dollars, but I think the example I used with you before is if in a small town there's a car dealership or a cafe or whatever, they want to, in their weekly ad in the local paper, they want to have a high school student be there, and they'll give the kid $20 a week to use their photo with their ad. That's fine. But and I think it's going to happen a lot. I really do. I don't have any concrete evidence, but we're just getting started. I think with the number of calls and emails the High School League office has received from school people, I think this is really happening in a lot of places. But the whole point of this policy is to, here's what you can do. Here's what you cannot do. You know, if you cross that line, you're risking your eligibility, and nobody wants anybody to be ineligible.
John Millay, media specialist, Minnesota State High School League, joining us. And John, thank you so much for the time. Of course, at John's Journal at mshsl.org. And John, with your school year coming up, School for Albert Lee already starts on Wednesday of next week. Yeah, they're back in school on Wednesday. We'll talk often during the school season if that works for you.
Anytime, Aaron. I love talking to you, and thanks for everything you do.
John Millay at 225.